Hi, this is Drew, and thanks for listening to our podcast. Hopefully, you've been enjoying our show for a while now, but if you're a brand new listener, then the next 50 seconds are not for you, so just go ahead and fast forward a bit. I just wanted to ask our longtime listeners to consider becoming patrons of The Drew Marshall Show, because by throwing us just a few bucks each month, you'll be helping what many tell us is the most brutally authentic spiritual show they've ever heard stay on the air. Look, as loyal podcast listeners, you've been getting the same programming our radio listeners have been hearing live Saturdays 1 to 5 for the last 16 years. Except you get to hear everything commercial-free, you smart consumer you. Well, because of a brand new arrangement with our studio, our expenses have now gone through the roof. And to be brutally honest, we could use the help to cover those costs. So just before you go to bed tonight, maybe you could stop by our website and click on the giant click here to become a patron sign. And if a whole bunch of you were able to scrounge up like $4 per month, then individually your $4 would have just made a massive difference in helping us cover what it costs to bring you the Drew Marshall Show. Okay, that's it. Sorry to bug you. Now on with the show. I hope you have a good sleep tonight after you become a patron. All right, singing in the background is the man we're about to speak with. You want to enjoy this track from Jean-Paul Samputu. Have a listen.
Chabuke hinu harazuru saberwe misozi igihumbi iteye neza gamije amasekerare cyawe dore kari simbisamo mu bantu mu badusangiye kugotonga mice nicene y'amaso dore sabyinyo yibyirukiye.
Well, it's a moment that I've been waiting for on our show for quite a while. I'm looking forward to speaking with Jean-Paul Samputu. He's a singer-songwriter, Rwandan peace activist. You've heard me talk about him throughout the show, and I know, Tim, this holds a special place in your heart as well, because of, like, which came first, your awareness of the Rwandan genocide or Romeo Dallaire?
It was the genocide first.
Right.
I remember being very cognizant and very aware of it when it was going on. And then after it all, you know, everything went to heck in a handbag. And then after it stopped, I guess about a year later, the whole fact that Romeo Dallaire, a Canadian, had sort of been there and witness to the whole thing, it piqued my interest again. Because, you know, Canadians, gotta like us, you know, we're okay.
Yeah, well, he certainly represented. And we've, of course, had Romeo Dallaire on our show a couple of times.
Three times, I think.
Is it three times?
Yeah.
You know, but look, here's someone else's story that was involved with the Rwandan genocide. 3 years prior to the Rwandan genocide, Jean-Paul Samputu, at the time a rising star in the East African music scene, spent 6 months in jail alongside thousands of other Tutsis who had been arrested in their homes. The jails were overflowing, so the government finally released the prisoners. But the situation grew increasingly tense. In April 1994, over a 100-day period, nearly 1 million Rwandan Tutsis lost their lives at the hands of their fellow Rwandans, the Hutus. Among the dead were several of Jean-Paul's family, including his parents, three brothers and a sister. And, you know, to read the rest of Jean-Paul's story, you can go to theforgivenessproject.com, a fantastic organization, a brilliant website. I love this. And if you need to talk about forgiveness at any time, it's certainly around Christmas. And joining us right now is Jean-Paul Samputu. Jean-Paul, first of all, how's the connection? Can you hear us okay?
We are lucky now.
Okay, well, I'm glad that you're with us. Thank you very much. Jean-Paul, where are you right now in the world?
I'm in Kampala right now.
Okay, and is that your home? Now, where do you live?
No, I live in UK, but my family is in Canada. So I'm between Canada and London.
Okay, all right.
See the now, on Monday, we'll be in Canada, because I'm going to spend Christmas in Canada.
Okay, Good. Well, I'm glad you're coming over to Canada for Christmas. There's no place like Canada at Christmas, let me tell you.
Oh, great.
So,
yeah, I believe.
Jean-Paul, the first thing I wanted to get was, you heard the intro, you heard me talk a little bit about your story. Is all of that accurate, first of all, or is there anything that you'd like to add?
Yeah, what I would like to add is a question I have to ask you or ask everyone. What can we do to stop any future genocide? Because genocide brings genocide. War brings another war. And revenge calls revenge. So the most important question to ask, what can we do to stop this cycle of violence as we see in the world?
I was listening to a friend of mine on Oprah's Super Soul Show, or Super Soul Sunday, I don't know what it's called, but his name is Paul Young, and he wrote a book called The Shack, and she asked him something similar, a very similar question, and his answer was, we need to let go of our right to be right. We have this immense need to be right. And he says that that's really something that, once we are aware of how much we need to be right and do something about that, that might have an impact on the amount of world atrocities. What do you think about that?
Yeah, that's the same thing I was, I will add something. We need to be responsible.
Hmm.
Every human being, with what you see in the world, that's what, that's my message, we need to be responsible. Responsibility is what every leader is needed, even every human being, because our children, or the children in the future, the children of our children, we ask us, what have we done to prepare their future? We need to be responsible.
So, Jean-Paul, when it comes to forgiveness, I don't think many of us will have processed it. Wow, I don't think I said that right. We'll have to process it the way that you have processed it. When it comes to forgiveness, most of us will never see the horror that you were a part of, that your family was a part of. So if anybody has the right to speak about forgiveness, it's you. But let me challenge you with this, first of all. When something is completely out of your hands, and then you go ahead, and when I mean out of your hands, I mean the Rwandan genocide, that was out of your hands. You could not stop that. Next thing you know, your family is massacred, or many members of your family are massacred, and then this happens while you're somewhere else, and now you're living somewhere else. Do you think if you were walking the streets today and you found out the person or people who actually murdered your family, do you really think that you could have the attitude of forgiveness in your heart?
Well, when I learned that a friend of mine, and he was even a friend of my father, is the one who killed him, so I lost my... That the first I wanted to... It's like... I wanted to kill him. That's the first thing I wanted to do. The spirit of revenge, directed me to try to find him and kill him. And I didn't know how I was going to do, because I have not killed in my life. And that time I was trying to find him. And the revenge, I was... I spent 9 years trying to find him, and because I couldn't find him because he was in prison, so I start to kill myself because I couldn't, I was asking myself all the day, or every day, why he did that, how he did that to me, and when I was trying just to find solutions, and then I found myself in a self-destruction, killing myself by drugs and alcohol, and I became an alcoholic addicted in 2002. And and I couldn't find him. So I said, okay, the one I was killing, Jean-Paul, I was killing myself. I was trying to destroy me. That's why revenge is bad. Revenge kills yourself. And many people don't know. That's why I had just to find a solution. And I had, to have my life back, or I was supposed to do something. I was supposed to do something, you know, difficult that I did that time. Then I said, okay, if I don't do this, I will die. If I do this, I will survive. So I did. I forgave him. The power of forgiveness helped me to overcome what everything I was going through, the anger, the bitterness, the resentment. That was my poison, especially revenge. And that's what we talk about, revenge, because the human beings always, and you start the question saying you want to challenge me. Let me say this. We human beings don't not understand, many people in the world, it's they don't understand that forgiveness is for you, mm-hmm. not for the offender. Forgiveness is, it means to liberate from your anger, your bitterness. You know, forgiveness, it's a freedom. So people think that when you forgive someone, it's a gift you give to him. No, forgiveness is for you. So it's a relief. So that's what happened. And I did that. The one minute, I decided, I made it. It's a choice. I made that choice, and I was healed the same day, the same minute. So, I went to find him. I went out to find him and forgive him publicly in what we call that time in Rwanda, Gachacha. It's a traditional court. And we were together. It was a gathering in the village. And I did publicly, and we started the forgiveness campaign together. We organized the, you know, the conferences, and we said this what happened, this reconciliation should be an example to our children, to the future, to the country. And we did that. And since that time, my life changed forever. My music changed forever. I only sing about love. You know, of course it's forgiveness, but forgiveness, why? Why you forgive? Because you want to love again. Because, you know, what happened in genocide, you know, it's hard to people to love again, to love, you know, you have to do something. Something must to happen in your life that you can love again. Loving is healthy.
Yeah, so. Well, Jean-Paul, I just want people to get a little bit more of your story, because you have painted a lovely picture of forgiveness and a little bit of your journey, but I don't think people will get the depth of your forgiveness until they really understand a little bit more of your story. And I want to read part of your story, which, of course, I found on theforgivenessproject.com. When the government started teaching Hutus how to hate, my father warned me to leave the country as I was a well-known Tutsi musician and therefore an obvious target. At first, my parents didn't realize that they were also in danger, because in the Butare South, I don't know if I pronounced that right, Butare, is that how you say it?
Mm-hmm, yes.
Okay.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
We lived side by side with our Hutu neighbors, and my father would say, I trust them, they are my friends. Even when I begged him to leave, he said, I'm 86 years old, I want to die here. Now, I want to stop there for a second, because as you just said, Jean-Paul, it was your father's friend who killed him, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. He was at the same time my friend, you know, the closest neighbor. And also my father, we call him when he wants something. He was, you know, a closest neighbor, closest friend of my father.
So what, I mean, you know, the rest of us, we don't understand this at all, man. We don't. What the heck happened to your father's friend that poisoned his mind so much that he ended up killing your father? That makes zero sense to me.
Yeah, I ask very simple. You know, when we were reconciled and we are sitting together, then having a meal together, then asked him why not? You were supposed to save him, you were supposed to hide him, why he did that? And he said, Jean-Paul, you don't know the law of the genocide. The law of the genocide at that time was a very good friend or a closest neighbor is the one who must finish the work. You know, that's the word they were using. Killing was working. You know, the Hutu, when they were going to kill, they were not saying we are going to kill, we are going to work. it was a job, it was something they have to do. It was called work. They go to work. So I was the one who was supposed to kill your father, because even if I wouldn't hesitate to do that, but still I had to choose that me, I die or I kill him. So I had to do that. And he told me also there was, you know, he was convinced that this is something to do, because they mobilized people. It was something they felt that they have to do that, because to killing Tutsi was a job, a nice job to do. Was something everybody was doing in the government, everybody, until they got the conviction that we have to exterminate Tutsi.
So, Jean-Paul, how did your father's friend kill him? Was he shot? I don't understand how all of this went down.
He wanted to tell me that, and I didn't want to hear that. I didn't want to hear, you know, it was hard. I didn't want.
Yeah, you didn't want to know.
Yeah, you know,
that's fair.
I didn't want to, you know.
That's fair. Yep, very fair. All right, I want to continue here. It took a long time in my village to mobilize the Hutus to kill, because some were married to Tutsis. Imagine being told to hate this person you love and who you have been together with for so long. Wow. So I left on foot through the forest and started a music tour in Burundi and Uganda. The news spread abroad quickly that the Hutus were killing all Tutsis, and that's how I learned that my parents, three brothers, and a sister had been killed. Do you know who killed your brothers and your sister?
No. I will not, you know, I tried to find them. I thought maybe they were alive. Then I learned that, you know, I spent like months trying to find them. I thought maybe they're alive. Maybe I will see, you know. So what happened? So my sister was married in Kigali, and she died in Kigali, and also her husband. It was difficult to where her husband was a Hutu, but he couldn't even protect. It was hard because he was also in trouble, because that time a Hutu to marry a Tutsi was also another problem, a big problem to them. So, and we have not known those who killed them.
Yeah. Look, everybody who hears your story, Jean-Paul, at least I think everybody who's listening to your story would be putting themselves in your position and say, subconsciously, they might be thinking, well, how would I respond? How would I react? And when they hear you say, I went back and I tried to find them, well, why did you try to find them? Well, I tried to find them so I could kill them for killing my family. I think a part of us, if we're honest, Jean-Paul, if we're honest, we totally understand that. Like, we resonate with that. Vengeance is such an easy thing to come up inside of us. And so when we hear this story of, you know, you said it so perfectly just a little while ago. I couldn't kill them because I couldn't find them. I couldn't kill them, so I ended up killing myself. Man, I mean, that is the truth, right? I mean, the it's such a poison that takes over your mind that you end up killing yourself. And you did this through drugs and alcohol, I guess.
Yeah, 9 years.
9 years, dude. You're lucky you're alive. You are lucky you're alive.
Mm-hmm. Praise God.
So, do you think, I don't know how to ask this question, do you think it's easier for people who believe in God to forgive than people who don't believe in God?
Yeah, the good question, because people who believe in God and who even say we are Christians, you know, I was thinking they will support me, but I got people. I got rejection from among of them. then that's why I said, okay, it's not just saying or showing that I'm a Christian. It means that you are. No, you know, even the people who committed genocide, 90%, they were Christians. So when they told people, they tell them, oh, go to kill people, they did. And they were Christians. And they killed them in the church.
Gee.
So, killing, being Christian, you see it in action. In action, your actions, that's the action that can prove who you are. So in this world, nobody can come and say, I'm a Christian or I love God, if you don't love your neighbor, if you don't love your friend, if you don't even, you know, for me, a Christian is someone who loves even his enemies, who bless his enemies, who pray for his enemies. How many we have in this world? So you can, that's what I can say, because I have seen a lot. I was disappointed by what the so-called Christians, when I went to forgive, I was thinking they were going to support me, but of course they are not all, but those I was expecting to support me and to support the work I did, because the work of Christianity, they didn't do that until now. It's not only that, you know, so that's why, yeah, nobody can come and say, hey, I'm a Christian, you know. I will see your actions, but I will see your actions.
Ugh.
How you treat others, how you treat others, how you treat your enemies. That's the way you treat your enemies, the way you understand even the enemy. You know, your enemy, that's what I remember. Jesus said that, treat the others the way you want to be treated. And he said, love your enemies. Pray for your enemies. Those who do that are the ones who can call themselves Christians.
You know, you have just profoundly driven another, well, you've made an indelible imprint in my psyche again, because of course cognitively I'm aware of the fact that Christianity is supposed to be about, well, okay, it's easy to love those who are easy to love, but if you can't love those that are hard to love, then really I'm not sure you can call yourself a Christian, you know, that kind of thing. Yet at the same time, Jean-Paul, the hypocrisy level is huge.
And you remember Jesus said that.
Yeah.
You know, Jesus said that in Matthew, I think, 5:46. If you love those who love you, what reward are you going to get? Even the pagans do that, do the same. So he said, just love your enemies, then you can be, you know, have a reward. You know, actually, what you just said, he said that. I don't know where you find that, or it's yours, that he said that. What reward are you going to do if you don't love those who love you?
Yeah.
Does everybody do that? Yeah.
Well, I've just had this conversation come up time and time again in the last couple of weeks. I have said that eventually I want to get to the point where it's easier for me to love those that are hard to love. That's the litmus test for, you know, I guess if there is such a thing as faith in my life, I want it to make a difference in that area. And this message has been really timely for me again. So thank you personally. I really don't care if anyone's listening to the show right now, because this has been for me. So thank you very much. Okay, Jean-Paul, I want people to follow you, to buy your music, to listen to your music, to invite you to come over to Canada to speak. Well, you're here a lot anyway. You have family up near Ottawa, is that right?
Yeah, Ottawa. Yeah.
Okay. Well, hopefully hopefully you'll get invited by Justin Trudeau. Have you heard of that guy? Do you know his name?
Yeah, because you know, yeah, I mean, Canada. Then, I would love, you know, for I have not, you know, done much in Canada. That's why I want to do, you know, I want to do this, like my speaking engagement, my message over Canada, because it's a nice country that receives many people from all over the world, and we want those people to be driven by love, you know. Because we our differences should be our power. You know, we are different, but why? But it's good. It shouldn't be a problem that we are different. Our differences, it's a wealth we have. Being different, it's good.
Yeah.
So people use the differences by doing something bad. So, and in Canada, it's a nice country, and I would love to do, you know, I just came from Venezuela and in Nicaragua to speak about forgiveness.
Oh,
and,
man, good.
And it was a good tour, and that people understand. They say, we need this, you know. And as well in Canada, we'd be happy. That's where my family is. My children are there, you know.
Oh, good, good.
Well,
I want to tell our listeners about two websites. One is theforgivenessproject.com, and that's, of course, where I found Jean-Paul's story, but also Jean-Paul's website. So here it is. It's Jean-Paul Samputu, Samputu.com. So Jean-Paul Samputu.com. And that is if you want to send him a note, if you want to bring him over and have him speak, if you want to get his music, if you just, this is a guy you need to follow, because if anybody has the right to talk about forgiveness, it's you. Jean-Paul, this has been an absolutely perfect message for all of us to hear just before Christmas, because, you know, we struggle with forgiveness when it comes to just our own family members who we want to slap around because they've been dopey with us or something. But in contrast to the kind of hell that you've gone through, I think the rest of us need to suck it up and offer up not only forgiveness but grace. You know, I don't remember who said this, but I'll say it again. I've said it quite often on the show. Forgiveness is not getting what you deserve, and grace is getting what you don't deserve. What do you think?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yes. And remember, you become what you don't forgive.
Ooh. Ooh. Snap.
Ooh.
Drop the mic on that one. Well done, Jean-Paul.
Ooh.
I like it.
Yeah.
Oh, man. All right. Listen, we got to fly, man. But Merry Christmas, Jean-Paul. Merry Christmas to you.
Oh, Merry Christmas. I can't wait to see you when I come. I will call you maybe when I come in Toronto. Then I can meet you.
Dude, if you come to Toronto, you come into the studio and bring your guitar. We want you to jam with us here, okay?
Yes, I will sing that song called You Become What You Don't Forgive.
I love it.
You will love the song.
I love it. Good stuff.
Yeah.
Jean-Paul, thank you, sir. Take care.
Thank you so much.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.
Merry Christmas.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Merry Christmas. Jean-Paul Samputu. See?
Wow.
Can we not get schooled by guys like that?
Man.
That's my David Letterman laugh.